You're listening to Good Food on KCRW. I'm Evan Kleiman. I've had the good fortune of interviewing Britain's domestic goddess, Nigella Lawson, several times over the past couple of decades. The emotional intelligence she brings to the kitchen is a gift to us all. And then there's her writing. It's swoon-worthy, and I'm not generally a swooner. So it's with great joy and anticipation that I welcome her back to Good Food. Hi, Nigella.
Hello. That is a lovely introduction. Thank you. I've always enjoyed talking to you. And there's so much to talk about when one talks about food.
So much. To prepare for this conversation, as well as the two that we're going to be having live in Santa Barbara and in Irvine over the next few weeks, I decided to go back and reread your first book. And the first thing that struck me is the title, How to Eat, not How to Cook, but How to Eat. And for some reason, I find it something so useful to think about now. What can you tell us about that choice of title or focus?
Well, actually, it was my late husband's idea. He had said to me, you really should, you know, as a journalist at the time and not a food journalist, and he said, you really should write a book about food and how it works and what you think about it, because you're very confident in your responses about food. And he didn't mean so much that I was the most confident person in the kitchen, but that I always had quite emphatic beliefs or understanding about, I think this goes with that, or no, this has been done. Why have they done that? Because I had been actually a restaurant critic briefly. And he said, you should call it How to Eat. And it was a good way to go into it, even though I said that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And of course, I don't want to do a food book. It seemed an odd thing, but I think it's a very good way to go into it, because how everyone really interacts with food is through the eating. It's a language that speaks to those who perhaps consider themselves cautious in the kitchen and don't regard themselves as cooks. But I think that really it was about saying you don't have to apologize for being a home cook.
The title of this new book is Cook, Eat, Repeat, which could signal the drudgery of feeding ourselves. But repetition is also at the heart of comfort, don't you think?
Yes, I do. I you know, it's very interesting. It sounds, I mean, I actually did write this book in lockdown, in the very long lockdown we had in the UK, the 4-month lockdown in March 2020. However, with a title like that, you would think it had been conceived during COVID, but it was a pre-pandemic project. But I felt that repetition and the notion of that focus on what you were cooking each day and the structure of cooking and then eating kept a lot of people together. Ritual and repetition have always been the markers of human society.
You famously talk about the deliciousness yet unphotogenic quality of brown food, yes, which I feel makes a lot of appearances this time of year as we're in fall and go into the cooler months. There's a dish I was looking at in your Christmas chapter that's the beef cheeks with chestnuts and port. Could you speak, yes, a bit about that?
Well, yes, I feel that there's something about chestnuts that always makes me feel it could be, I could just have turned away from a Dickensian side street where people are roasting chestnuts and then putting them in brown paper bags. And you buy a bag of warm chestnuts, holding it to keep your hands warm. And, you know, as a child, although I promise you Dickens was no longer alive, that was quite commonplace in winter in London at any rate. And I love a stew. And yet I wanted to make a stew that felt luscious, that felt almost instantly you felt the flickering log fire and, you know, the sense that you were, you know, covered in rather wonderful claret-coloured velvet. And that's indeed what the port made me think of and the chestnuts. So it's quite there's a quite traditional wintry foods. But, of course, beef cheeks, that I would love to be able to say, and this used to be the case until very recently, there were cheaper cuts of meat. You had to go to a butcher, but, you know, it's fibrous, it's tough, and yet cook it for a long time. And it becomes almost like you cannot tell whether it is solid or part of the port and the stock in the stew. There's something that is so particularly wonderful about it. Of course, in very recent years, suddenly these have all become hip. There aren't that many butchers, and so those cuts aren't that affordable anymore, which is a great pity. But they certainly are worth getting because there's, you know, the idea that you would, I mean, they're not as expensive as fillet steak, and fillet steak, it would make me weep to have that rather than that intense flavour and richness that you get in cuts like beef cheeks. So I suppose it's just the sort of stew I do if I have people round. You know, I'm a great believer in cooking ahead. It makes me feel very much safer and securer when I know that there's food to be eaten later.
When I think about this time of year, strangely enough, I also think about sandwiches because there's always leftovers that are really great building
it's
blocks.
It's the most important thing. And I wrote about that a bit in terms of Christmas, because it's what we do. We don't have Thanksgiving, but we have the turkey, the roast potatoes, you know, all the vegetables and the cranberry sauce and so forth. So there are similarities. And yes, I couldn't agree with you more. The sandwiches that are when either the Thanksgiving or the Christmas feast really comes into its own, really. It lives again and so powerfully. And it is a time for condiments as well. And I enjoy that.
What are some of your favorite condiments these days?
There are so many. I am very keen. If not, I would make me anxious to travel without it. Just very basic English mustard, which is hot mustard that we have. It's, you know, the British wasabi. And I adore that. In 1986, I have to tell you, I went to a friend's house for Christmas and there was no English mustard there. And it was the most terrible thing, obviously, in terms of, I had lots to worry about that year. It was a difficult time. My mother had died recently. Not that recently, but, you know, a mother's death is always recent. And so it was anyway a difficult time. And then no English mustard, I really felt at a loss. And that was 1986, and it still makes me slightly hyperventilate when I think about it. So English mustard for sure. And by the way, that English mustard is wonderful, in a way used a bit like wasabi and stirred into soy sauce for as a dressing. I mean, over some leftover carrots, for example, heavenly.
May I ask you what brand of hot mustard you prefer?
Coleman's. As far as I'm concerned, it has to be Coleman's. That's just like the most basic brand.
Well, Nigella, I thank you so much for spending the time with us. And I look so forward to our conversations that we'll be having in the coming weeks.
Well, so do I. I feel we could have gone on for the rest of the day, frankly.
That's Nigella Lawson. She's on book tour discussing Cook, Eat, Repeat. I'll be in conversation with her next Saturday, November 12th, at the Granada Theater in Santa Barbara, and again at the Barclay Theater in Irvine on November 26th. Please join us. For more information, go to our website, kcrw.com/goodfood.